Frontal Dysplasia Clinic Midwest is a Chicago-based premier practice and one-stop shop for all things related to butt health, specializing in anal precancer screening and treatment. And joining us now is the founder of ADC Midwest, Dr. Gary Bucher. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. So a question for you. What inspired you to start the ADC Midwest?
About 20 years ago, I used to have an HIV primary care practice, and I knew that anal cancer was increasing in that population. And I started doing anal PETs to screen for anal cancer and would refer them to colorectal surgeons, and they would just put a scope in and say, hey, everything looks fine, when I knew that wasn't appropriate workup. So I actually learned how to do high-resolution endoscopy and treatment of precancer lesions, and stopped doing HIV primary care and strictly have focused on this because there's no one in Chicago doing this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very important work, you know, and according to the American Cancer Society, the number of new anal cancer cases are rising. I said at the top of the show, a friend of mine just lost her mother around the holidays to anal cancer. What are the signs and symptoms of anal cancer, and what are some of the misconceptions and risks about the whole thing?
Well, as far as anal cancer, we're trying to actually find precancer lesions, lesions that are susceptible to progressing to cancer.
Oh, okay.
But a lot of people for just symptoms for anal cancer would be bleeding or itching, or you feel a mass. And these precancer areas do not have any symptoms. So, you know, I see a lot of people that don't have symptoms, but they do screening, and they have lots of precancer areas. So screening is important because you obviously can't, you might not have any symptoms.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what is, and what it would be like is the course of treatment. I mean, I'm sure, of course, you know, it varies from, you know, patient to patient. But what is the course of treatment once you find these precancerous areas? What how do you go about treating it?
Well, one of the interesting things that you mentioned was that your friend mother had anal cancer. And traditionally, anal cancer has been a cancer of women.
But really?
That, yes. Which, so I wasn't surprised when you mentioned that, but really we're seeing more, the more incidence of cancer occurring in other high risk groups. HIV positive men who have sex with men is the highest risk group. The incidence is about 460 per 100,000 will have anal cancer. So it's a really high number. The next high risk group would be, men who have sex with men who are HIV negative. So that's far surpassing the amount of women that are having anal cancer right now. And then we have women with genital, like vulvar precancer, and also transplant individuals 10 years post-transplant where they're on immunosuppressants. So when we screen for anal precancer, we're actually doing an anal pap smear, just like women get with a cervical pap, because the virus is the same that causes cancer in both locations. And we do a pap smear and we do a high-risk HPV test. And then if those are abnormal, we'll do high-resolution endoscopy, which is similar to what we do with women called colposcopy, meaning we're going to look at the anal tissue with our magnifying surgical scope. And if we see these precancer lesions, we'll have them come in and treat them. And the way we treat these is that we will burn them off with a little electrocautery, or sometimes we might use some topical medication, which aren't the best way just because, you know, patients aren't that compliant on trying to get a cream inside their bottle.
Right.
right. Regularly. It's easier just to get it done, you know, just burning it off. But those are the standard treatments for precancer.
Huh. Okay. So wait, now I've got, you were saying that it's the most common cancer for folks living with HIV AIDS and for folks who, men who have sex with men. How is that
correlate?
Yeah. How does that correlate? And does the HIV diagnosis, does that, is that connected with the creation of anal cancer?
Yes.
Yeah. How does
right.
that all work?
So the thing, the connection between HIV and gay men is that they're more sexually active. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of exposures. So it really sets up the scenario where you're constantly being infected with HPV. Because HPV is the most common STD. It's spread by skin-to-skin contact. So even if someone wasn't having a bottom, mm-hmm. or they could still, they're still at risk for anal cancer, because just when you're touching and rubbing, feeling around the skin on the outside, that HPV can kind of creep in. So in the thing, just like with transplant patients with HIV, even though most people's T cells and the immune system improves markedly with medication, there's still some part of the immune system that's missing. So that their risk is a lot higher. And as they're living longer due to the medications that, you know, decrease in that immunosuppressant there in their system, just kind of over time, that persistent HPV infection can cause changes, which can lead to cancer. And in gay men who are HIV negative, it's probably more just of lots of the exposures to HPV and that their immune system doesn't recognize it.
So, okay, so HPV is a very, is the cause of this cancer. Yes. Okay. Yes. Now,
high risk types of HPV.
High risk. Okay. Cool.
In particular.
So now I know there is, you know, the HPV. There's like, isn't there like a vaccine that they were talking about? Is that something that you would recommend to give young? I mean, all young people to help stave off cancers? Is it like a very big preventative measure for cancers, especially anal cancer?
Yeah, so the HPV vaccine, also known as Gardasil, it's the only cancer preventive vaccine we have. And the vaccine covers 9 different strains. 2 of the strains that are low risk cover low risk types of HPV that cause warts. So people don't like warts either, so that's a good thing. It prevents people from getting warts.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
Nobody
down
wants that.
There. No.
We don't want cancer either, so it also covers 7 high-risk strains, which can cause anal cancer, and the most common types that we see are type 16 and 18. And those specific high-risk types not only cause anal cancer, it causes throat cancer like Michael Douglas had, and that's really on the rise now also because of people having more oral sex. You have cervical cancer, you have penile cancer, and you have anal cancer. HPV infects all those different skin types.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a...
And the vaccine will prevent it.
I have a friend, doctor, that had anal cancer, and when he told me he got it, he's a straight man from HPV, I didn't realize men even got HPV. I always thought of it as a woman.
Oh, yeah, no. It's
but
men,
obviously,
you get it,
yeah. No, obviously, and he, luckily for him, he's... It's in remission right now, but he was one of the lucky.
Great.
Yeah, he's one of the lucky ones. But I was just taken aback because I just never. I always heard from the gynecologist about HPV, but again, didn't realize that men were susceptible too. But obviously, they are.
Men are, but you know, you said he was a straight friend, so. Again, you don't have to have receptive anal sex. You can just get HPV from rubbing, touching, feeling as you're playing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how often would you recommend folks to get screened for anal cancer? And is there like, and clearly, I guess it's, men who have sex with men are at the top of that list. How often would you recommend screening?
So the International Anal Neoplasia Society just came out with screening recommendations for who should be screened. So not everyone should be screened. We're really talking about those high-risk groups. So, and they have different ages. So, for instance, the HIV-positive MSM, or men who have sex with men, and HIV-positive trans women should start at age 35 with a yearly anal pap and HPV test.
Oh,
and HIV-positive straight men and women, it starts at age 45. In transplant patients, we say 10 years after your transplant, because then you've been on suppressant therapy that long, that your risk increases. And if a woman has had a history of vulvar cancer or vulvar precancer, you should start screening them right away, no matter what age. So really, the cancer is more of a cancer in older groups. In HIV positive people, it's a little bit younger when we start screening. But as far as screening everyone, that's not indicated like we do with cervical cancer screening.
Wow. Okay. So if folks are interested in finding out a little bit more about the work that you do at the Anal Dysplasia Clinic Midwest, what's a great resource for them and how can they set up an appointment?
Well, we have a really great website. It's adcmidwest.com. We can also call at 312-623-2625 to set up a screening appointment. On the website, it's really helpful because, you know, people aren't familiar with HPV or with anal cancer, and I have a great video that explains the different types of HPV. And I also have a video that actually explains what a high-resolution endoscopy is and how we perform that procedure so that people are informed before they're coming in. But as far as, you know, one thing that I want to get across, another way to find us is that we were a big site for the big anal cancer prevention study in HIV-positive people. 7 years ago, mm-hmm. I was on, and we talked about getting screened for anal cancer through the study.
Yep.
And in that study, it concluded showing that treating these precancerous lesions reduces anal cancer by 60%.
Wow. Mm.
So it was published in the New England Journal. So we're really now, along with the clinical care guidelines put out by the International Immunoneoplasia Society, the standard of care is changing for people with HIV, that it's going to be a requirement to be screening HIV-positive individuals and having those lesions treated.
Well, I'm so glad that you were able to take time out today to join us on the show to talk about this very, very important mm-hmm. preventative care. For more information, again, go to adcmidwest.com. Even if you aren't showing any symptoms, it's good to, and you're sexually active.
Yes, get screened.
And you don't have the HPV vaccine, make sure that you go and check this out. Dr. Gary Bucher, I appreciate it, and thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. We will take a quick break, and when we come back, it is the second hour of Out Chicago right here on WCPT.
I'd like to welcome you to WCPT AM's Out Chicago. Think of us as Sunday brunch with your gay best friends. Now please welcome your host, Scott Duff.
And welcome back to the second hour of Out Chicago. Scott Duff here along with Ellen Miller.
Yes, indeed.
There we are. We're going to be just talking and gabbing and doing all that good stuff about lots of stuff and junk. We're dumb talking like we're gonna talk about that later. But right now I'm so super duper excited to have our guest here in studio. Look, Steppenwolf has like a bona fide hit on their hand with the world premiere of Brandon Jacob Jenkins' Purpose. It is an epic family drama following the Jasper family, which is a pillar of Black American politics. Run, don't walk to see this show and the incredible cast. And joining us now is one of those people from the incredible cast, Ayanna Bria Bakari. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone.
Nice
I'm so happy
see
to be
you.
Here.
Nice
Thank
to
you.
Have you.
Thank you for being here. First of all, congratulations. Ellen and I both saw the show opening week. Look, you know you're in for a treat when you walk into Steppenwolf and you see a dining room table. Because mm-hmm. if there's a dining room table, yeah. you know mm-hmm. stuff is going to mm-hmm. go down. Mm-hmm. Congrats. How is the run going?
The run is going spectacularly. Like, the people are showing up and uh-huh. showing out and engaging with the play. The audiences are roaring. Uh-huh. We are feeling so supported on stage by, you know, the responses that we are receiving from the people and the team at Steppenwolf. Everybody's just so excited about this play. It truly is a blessing.
I cannot remember the last time I was in a theater mm-hmm. where there were so many collective gasps and like, what? No. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm a goofball mm-hmm. and I think things are funny that are weird. Mm-hmm. So if like 500 people, I'll go, mm-hmm. I will tend to laugh
you're
at that.
Because
like, that's funny. You are not laughing because you're going, you don't want to miss anything that's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
that has got to be just like, how, as a performer, yeah. like, okay, this is very rare.
And how about the fact that after the first first act was over, I've never heard this in all my years, people were hooping and hollering before the intermission. Mm-hmm. You never hear that at the end. Then,
we don't need an intermission. Let's just get right to the next one.
Like, oh my God. It jumped off the page. I mean,
thank you.
You know, it's something special for sure. And everybody felt it. And everybody is continuing to feel mm-hmm. it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I know we were going to ask you about the rehearsal process.
Yeah.
One of my friends is on the production team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling us at the cast at the party after opening night that Felicia was literally giving you pages a day or two before opening.
Well, not Miss Felicia. It was Brandon.
I'm sorry.
Brandon was working until the very last second.
And that she did not flinch. These pages came in and she was just didn't write in. I think maybe it has a lot to do with her work in sitcom work where they were constantly doing that and she knew that that's how it goes.
Yeah.
But the fact that you all could do that 2 days beforehand, you're getting a new page, mm-hmm. and now one time I noticed, I think you might have ad-libbed a line on opening night, maybe one word that was so perfect that you got a laugh out of it. And I was not sure if that were, it was like a word you were at the dinner table and it just seemed like it was a part of what you were supposed to say, and maybe you threw in an extra word.
Oh, at that point, I don't think I was throwing in extra words. I was trying to make sure I was saying all the right words.
Okay,
but if I did, you know.
It was, you got to laugh. I mean, you were just, you know, everybody in the cast is just phenomenal.
I think that also just goes to the brilliance of the entire cast. Like,
yeah. And I just want to say, to the point you were talking about us getting new pages, yeah. like Miss Felicia reminded us that our purpose here is to serve the play.
Yeah.
Until we're done. But our rehearsal process was to serve and to support Brandon's process as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I mean, we were a great group of people that could execute and support him in that process, because like you said, he was giving us pages and giving us, we were on book and on script until the day before opening night. And, but we were here for it. Because anytime he came with new pages, we would be like, oh my God, give me.
Because it's like, how long have you been? I know this play has been in development for quite some time. Mm-hmm. How long have you been involved with it? Did you just come up with this?
I became involved with it, I'll say, when I booked the job in, I think it was sometime in November,
mm-hmm.
and then we had a workshop in January, okay. and then we started rehearsal in February.
Because I think there was a previous workshop maybe a couple of years ago. So you were like, all right, we're going in.
This was my year for this production, yes.
As an actor, I love working on new work because it really is.
Same.
I'll speak for myself, but like, what is it about? You speak for you. What is it about working, like creating a new piece that's just so like,
Well, it's the autonomy, it's the freedom, it's the flexibility that the team, the director and the playwright afford the actors that I love, that we get to build these characters from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be anything we make them, or they can just be us. And I think I played a lot around in the beginning with like trying to figure out who this woman is, just, you know, simply based off the information that I was provided in the rehearsal process. And I think once we finally got act two, I was able to use the language I created in developing the first act of the play and translate it into the second act. So it was easily carried over. Though the only hard part was just memorizing everything.
It's a talky-talky play.
Okay. All have a moment in this play where we're all like, we have a really profound opinion about something, and Brandon allows us to be heard and allows us to take the time to speak on those things that we're so passionate about or that we consider our purposes.
You don't want to miss, because there's laughter, there's gasping, you don't want to miss a line, because every one of them is just great. Mm-hmm. You know, it's written so it's easy to listen to. It's easy to hear, and you're just hanging on every word. I just want to, for our listeners, we keep referring to Felicia. Let's just make sure we know. It's Felicia Rashad is the director who was known for her work on The Cosby Show as Bill Cosby's wife.
She's an incredible director.
And
she's
incredible everything.
Yeah.
Okay, a teacher, inspiration, director, actor, just human being overall. Like, she really worked with us to get us to the root and the life of the play, so that even when we didn't have the script, like I said, talking about the language translating into the second act, it was so important that she built that in us in the beginning, so that when we did come to the pages, we were able to hop on it and jump on it and complete the story, because we've already done all this groundwork and foundational work with our characters in the beginning.
Exactly. The other thing I heard from my internal sources was everybody in the cast was awesome. He said there's always like a stinker. There's always, you know, there's always like some actor that's a little bit of a prima.
We all smell good in this play.
But everybody smells good in this play.
Okay. I got that. Smelling rich. Okay.
And, smelling good. And you know, it shows, because it's a flawless, it's, you know, nothing's perfect, but this show is just, it's what you want out of a play. It's, and if you've come, if you've been a longtime Steppenwolf supporter and theater goer, you know that sometimes it's, you know, they don't always happen as frequently as you wish. This kind of feeling, the August Osage County feeling that we had on the, I was at opening night of that show.
Wow,
and we knew greatness was happening there. And we all felt, those of us that were there, felt that same greatness and future for the show, which, right away, my first words, I came home, I didn't care about any reviews, I said, this show is Broadway bound and Tony bound. I mean, really, and is there, I know you probably can't, is there talk of it?
Listen,
can you
people
give us
talk,
hints?
People talk, but I'm waiting for the email, I'm waiting to read it, you know.
I'm
but,
coming
you know,
to New York,
talking,
I'm coming to New York.
Shoot, I'm coming too, and I hope they won't be, you know, but I'm just saying, like, all the talk is great, because the more we put that energy into the universe, I mean,
yes.
How can the universe deny
it? It's going to happen.
Well, so if you're just joining us, we are speaking with Ayanna Bria Bakari, part of the incredible cast of the ensemble piece, Purpose, that is having its world premiere at Steppenwolf right now. You play Aziza, who is kind of like, that would be the role I'd want to play.
Yeah,
because
right.
It is like, it's the outsider. Mm-hmm. You are the fish out of water.
The guest, you
the
know.
The guest into kind this of. Home, which when it is, you're dealing with this very important family. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's your character who, there's so many incredible speeches. Like,
no, go ahead.
But there's talking about black excellence and about what it means to live up to.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, I think that's the character,
that
Morgan.
Morgan, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Well, she's talking to Naz,
I can't
even. Alana Arenas.
She scares the crap.
Oh, my God, she's fire.
She is fire in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That act one, she might have five lines, I think, but I'm like, look out.
The loudest one in the room.
The loudest one in the room, yeah. But there's like, what is, so how did you, I mean, I know you talked a little bit about the process, but how did you come into this being like, okay, so I'm the fish out of water. I'm coming into here. What was that?
It was kind of like life imitating art, art imitating life kind of moment, because I am the youngest and person in the cast, also working on stage with all these really established, great actors.
Yeah.
From Tamara to John Hill, and like all these people that I have aspired to work with for so long, working with people who raised me in TV and film, you know. And Alana actually is one of the first people I met when I moved to Chicago to go study at DePaul, because she's an alumni. She was on an alumni panel, and my father was like, get her phone number.
Right.
And then I saw her in a show at Steppenwolf called The Fundamentals, and I was sitting with my best friend in the audience, and I was like, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to be. And now I am there, like, on stage with her, sharing space and telling an amazing story. It's really like, Ayana felt like Aziza in the beginning of the process, because it's like everybody knows each other. Everybody's worked with each other before. The you know, I'm just like, oh, I don't know. I'm just a youngin' here,
right.
You know?
And
I'm
smiling like, oh, yes, yeah. You were on my wall.
Exactly. Yeah. You were on my wall. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I watched you on TV growing up. Uh-huh. And now I'm actually, we're colleagues. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, through that process of actually working with everyone, I settled in and I got my wiggles out. And, right. You know, I'm here. I'm a professional too. Like, I'm in this building. Yeah. Okay. But that feeling that Ayana felt is something that I let live in Aziza, and I continue to let live in her through this production, because that feeling of just being surrounded by such power and such elegance and such, you know, excellence is something that Aziza is so, like, attracted to, right, and just so grateful to be a part of, you know, until...
Stuff happened.
So,
right. Did we let our listeners know that this, you know, the political family that's, if you look at the play and you're from Chicago, you see some very distinct similarities between a political family here in Chicago, down to some, you know, details. Have any of Betty from that family, where I'm talking about the Jackson family, did any of them, have any of them come to see the show, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge.
I was sitting in back of Mayor Lightfoot, and Mayor Brandon Johnson was also there that night. So people that have, you know, that know the Jackson family were there, of course, and who know politics, obviously, and... I was like, during watching a thing, what are they thinking about right now? You know, what are these?
Listen, I hope that I understand that there is this political family in Chicago that some people may, you know, make parallels to the play.
People may make parallels, yes.
But I hope what people get from it is that it is a play about family and all types of family that deal with these kind of situations.
Right.
And I think that anyone that comes to the show will be able to see themselves or someone they recognize, you know, or someone they know or think they know, you know, on the stage.
Sure.
Because this is not, you know, an uncommon story to happen. They're, you know, about powerful families and then somebody coming in doing some weird stuff and, you know, uprooting all the work that, you know, the patriarch has, you know, established for the family. That this is a story that happens.
With powerful families and or just families, as you said, that are, you know, have a modicum of success, and then they have some flies in the ointment, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I loved about this play is, as we've been talking about, is y'all deal with some, like, very big, you know, like,
we touch
like
on
Greek, like Greek tragedy size issues. Mm-hmm. Like, you, gosh, I'm knocking over things. That's how big they are. And yet it all comes back to everything is all rooted about this family. How do you... Was there ever the urge to, like, you know, because of these incredibly powerful monologues, your monologue in Act Two, just stop?
About the pandemic.
About the pandemic and about all of the violence and unrest and everything and how we all seem to have forgotten it.
You know? Hit home with a lot of people.
Yeah. But, and it's so funny because, you know, I was just...
I find something new in it every night, honestly.
What is it like to say that? Because, go ahead.
I just really hope, because... people really don't talk about what it was like living during that world pandemic.
Yeah.
We got through it and we're like, back into the fray. You know,
I just want to put it back and don't even think about it.
Going to the theater, nobody's wearing masks anymore. And people, you know, and it's crazy because I say some things about, like, you know, people, we were afraid of, and anytime someone coughs, you were afraid, and we were afraid of each other's breath. And you're watching a show, you hear people cough, you hear somebody sneeze. You know, that's a really common.
We're like, she's right.
So it's like, dang. And then I wonder if people in the audience are like, oh, I just coughed.
Yes.
Dang, like, that's crazy. Like, nobody is thinking about that, you know? But I just think that it, like you said, we cover a lot of topics, and I'm glad that my character brought that feeling into the space, and that's where her purpose came from, you know, her finding her purpose. Because all of us in this play are defending our purposes and or finding them or don't know what they are. It's a journey for all of us.
Do you think Brandon's finally through writing it, or do you see he's going to be making revisions?
Listen, I actually really don't know, but
I would like to guess that, like, if he had, you know, if we had like another month of rehearsal or something like that, we would find more things to incorporate or to tease and to tweeze and stuff, because this play is so massive. Like we've said, there is like so many details and so many parts of this house, the house being the play, and like, you know, so many rooms that make me, you know, tidying or reorganizing and things. And but what we have and what we're living in right now is enough, and it's so beautiful. But you know, you always can dust up something here and there, you know, sweep, you know,
or open up this closet,
open the closet and see what comes out, you know, and then, you know, sort through those things. But I hope that we, or Brandon, gets more opportunities to really play and you know, massage and explore and discover this play. Because I think it's a masterpiece, and it's a map.
It is. All of that. And you could see at the opening, when you were all gathering for pictures, Felicia, Brandon, the cast, you could really feel by just looking at the body language of how you all feel about each other, about Brandon, and about the work you just did. Yeah. And that is magic.
Yeah.
And it comes through in the show.
Yeah. And I also want to say about Aziza's, like, she is a queer, openly queer character on stage. And like you said, like, you would want to play Aziza's part. I feel like she kind of is, like, saying or experiencing everything the audience is experiencing in real time, because these people, this family, knows each other, you know. And Aziza just came to do one little thing and then got right into the mix.
I just came to get your phone back, and then oh wait, I'm here now.
And now
he's got captive.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, you can't go, it's gonna snow.
I know, they would not
provide,
try to let me. I mean,
provide our perspective.
Nazareth is trying to save me.
Nazareth is trying to save you, and the mom swoops in almost like a Bond villain with a cat. You're like, no, you're going to stay here.
You're mine.
I want you to be my daughter-in-law. Yeah, well, we'll talk about that.
One thing that I first encountered your work at Steppenwolf with Last Night and the Night Before, which you were phenomenal in.
Thank you.
This play, you know, like many actors, when you go see the theater, you are like, what are they doing? How would you do this? You cannot see the work.
Thank you.
It is effortless. Your moment in act two, I'm just like, I'm on the edge of my seat, and I'm just like literally like watching all of you on stage, but you in particular. It really is like, this is I'm watching Aziza.
Yeah.
And it's, I just want to goof over you, because it is just your work, the work of the entire production team. Like, you just feel the love and the care that has gone in there. And it has become such a part of this ensemble of actors, which I know is a very big, important thing for Steppenwolf. But it is, you are clearly this unit, and you operate as this living thing.
It's crazy, because when you all saw it opening week, man, we, like you said, we had just officially gotten off book. And I said this to the cast. I was like, it literally feels like the first week we were doing it, we were literally holding hands in spirit, like holding each other and like pulling and pushing and raising each other up through this entire show. And just, I could feel everybody being present for everybody. And now that we're going into our fourth week of doing the show, we are free to experiment with things and grow and like try new things and like really deepen the connections between everybody, and not feel like the lines are, you know, or not knowing the lines or something that's
you're free
exactly to grow and to try new things. And
I want to see it again at the end.
I always say come back for a second.
I know, right?
The first thing Kathy, my wife, said was, we got to see it again. I saw you first in the Niceties at the Writers, and I thought, that young woman is going to be huge because of that performance that I saw. Was that one of your first?
That was not one of my first, but that is like the second show. That's actually the first show I did that made me join Equity.
Okay.
I went out to Writers, because I was going to do two shows at Writers that season, The Niceties and Stickfly. And my agents were like, just join Equity.
Yeah.
And then I haven't turned back ever since, obviously.
Not looked back.
Like,
no, you had a wise choice.
That was a powerful piece and a very
pivotal piece for me in my career. And it really solidified why it is that I do what I do. I do it for my people.
Yeah.
And I do these stories, and I tell these stories for the liberation and to, you know, enlighten and to encourage Black people, queer people. And I'm very passionate that I get to tell a story about a Black family being a queer woman in this play. And also bringing to light, you know, some of the complexities about what it's like being queer or being, you know, the weird child in a family when those things aren't really talked about and or encouraged or, you know, supported. Mm-hmm. And so it was wonderful to play this character coming into a play and coming into a story that I had to stand on something, and mm-hmm. I had to speak up for myself because I felt like we were just getting, you know, smushed under under some stuff that wasn't progressive.
Well, it came through in a big way. And I think as you go forward, you're going to be able to do more of that because people are going to want your voice doing what only you do, and you do so beautifully.
Thank you.
Really.
Thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, you definitely have two super fans.
Oh my gosh.
Right here in this room. Yeah.
Listen, I love it here. Can I move in?
Yeah. Yes, come on back anytime, but I know you got a show today. Look, everybody out there, do yourself a favor. Make sure you cannot miss Brandon Jacob Jenkins' Purpose at Steppenwolf. Runs through, gets extended again.
May 12th.
May 12th, and I think that's the final one because it's got something else to go on there.
Yeah, must close.
I think Laurie Metcalf might be coming in or whatever. But you need to go check this out. Go to steppenwolf.org for tickets. I thank you for taking time and for coming in today.
And wanting to come in. I met her that night, and your godmother, Doris, I said, I love her. She plays a queer woman. She's not queer in real life, is she, by any chance? Yes, she is. I'm getting her on the show. And I went and met you. So here you are. Yeah. So thank you for wanting to come in.
Of course. I'll come in anytime. I'm in the city. I'll be here.
Excellent.
And again, thank you for the beautiful work that you have done throughout your career. I'm so looking forward to watching what is next for you.
Yes. Thank you.
Because there's something about you that's just. Anyway, I'm going to stop because I'm going to cry now too. Because I'm just so happy. Go see Purpose at Steppenwolf through May 12th. Steppenwolf.org.
Don't hesitate.
Ayanna Bria Bakari, thank you so much. And have a fabulous rest of the run.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
We've got to take a quick break. And when we come back, there's more Out Chicago right here on WCPT.
I'm filmmaker Stephen Cohn. Welcome back to Out Chicago on WCPT.
Welcome back to Out Chicago. Scott Duff here along with Ellen Miller. We are still basking in the glow.
Yes, we are.
Of Ayanna.
She is an amazing woman.
I'm telling you, she's so young, which is great, but she's so good.
Yes, she
she's
is.
She's so good. I goofed on her. I'm going to keep goofing on her. Mm-hmm. On that entire cast, you do not see the work.
Mm-mm. It's just ease out there.
It's
just flawless and just magic. It's a show to behold. I told everybody I know, go see it.
Yeah.
And get tickets before you don't have a chance to, because it's only going to be here until May 12th.
I know.
It's flying by.
I know. That's a month.
Yeah.
Four more weeks.
Or you might be able to see it on Broadway. I would bet dollars to donuts that show is going to go to Broadway. I am absolutely that confident.
All right.
Yes,
there we
indeed.
Go. I think I agree with that. With Ayanna, I think they probably will go back in and massage and do some things.
Yeah, they always do. Yeah.
As you need to. But
yeah, I talked to Brandon a little that night too, and he's a very, very, very interesting man. Very
you
cool.
Did.
Yeah, because they were all there. And
of course.
You know, I was just so overwhelmed by everything. I needed to just tell them how much I loved it. They were very appreciative.
It's great. I know. I get very, very goofy.
I know.
About goofing on folks. I love to do it. So go see the shows through May 12th at Steppenwolf.
Yep.
It's really, really good. So
Mm-hmm. We have not really talked about any sort of like current events, things that are going on.
We need to do that.
Y'all, just a reminder, it's tax day tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure you get those little suckers done. Otherwise, you might be going to jail, too, for tax fraud or campaign contributions or whatever the things are that,
Not hush money.
Not hush money. But you might break some campaign laws and things like that,
things
and tax
like that.
Laws and things like that. So, yeah, so tomorrow begins the jury selection for Trump's hush money case. What do you think?
I'm getting a little bit jaded by his continual ability to slither out of everything. I mean, this is, of all of the indictments, these are the least crucial, I guess I would say, as far as, you know, what could happen to him, basically. But but it is a case where he is going to, apparently he's going to testify, is what he's saying. We'll see what happens. He's going to be in court. I do think the more that people see that he's in court, and, you know, at some point it's like, he's in court. He's got a trial. Think about this man. Is this a man you truly think should be, you know, commander in chief? I mean, he's got zero credibility. He's a liar.
But does any of that matter to his base?
No.
Can we open up the phone lines, Paul?
No,
just so like if people want to give it up.
It doesn't matter to his base. But
we would love to hear from you just real quick. 773-763-9278. We'd love to open up the phone lines, hear from all of you out there. What do you think? What's on your mind? Right now we're talking about this, the whole Trump on trial.
Yeah, his base is not going to change. But there are Republicans out there that I have talked to, that I've heard from, you know, from other friends or family members. They tell me they will not vote for him this time around. They will not. I mean, they're not. And there's all those that will. They don't care. They will go in there. They're going to have their ears plugged and their eyes closed. They're not seeing what we're seeing. But there are people that you can't look away from what he's saying, what he's, you know, the abortion situation. We just touched on it briefly.
What is his stance on abortion?
What is his stance on anything? We know what his stance is. What will further my power today?
What will
I say that will further my chance to be in power? That's all he cares about. He doesn't care about black people. He doesn't care about gay people. He doesn't care about his
women evangelicals.
He doesn't care about any of them. They're all tools for him to achieve his goals, his narcissistic, self-serving goal of being in power, period.
Well, avoiding getting in trouble. That's what it is. I don't think he wants to be in powder and powder, well, power, but like, you know, and tools is definitely a great way to describe them because they are definitely tools. It's like the whole reason why he's running is just so he doesn't have to end up in jail.
Well, remember, he announced that he was running a long time ago. So he's always been. Remember the day he took office when he was elected in 2016? In 2017, after he was inaugurated, he said, and now I'm starting my campaign for re-election. It's all he ever wants is to continue to.
But that's different. I think, like, he was saying that, and I think he realized, like, oh, wait, this is a really hard job, and I'm not very good at it, you know? And then he started, like, and then I'm going to commit a crime here, too.
He's not that self-aware.
I'm going to incite an insurrection, and then I got voted out. And now the only way to cover my butt is to run again. Like, it is self-preservation in the biggest way. We don't understand, like, this whole abortion thing. He's pissing off evangelicals because they want, like, a federal ban on abortion. But he's going back, like, well, maybe. I think it's best. We're doing great in the States.
He knows it's not popular. For the majority of people do not want a national ban on abortion.
Yeah.
You know, some of his aides are telling him that. So he's soft-pedaling this. I've done the job. It worked perfectly. Throwing Roe v. Wade out, you know, worked perfectly because now it's in the state's hands. It's ridiculous that he's saying these things.
Yeah, it is.
But he is a ridiculous person. He is a person that will say whatever he thinks will further him that day. Mm-hmm. And it could change in a week.
Oh, it changes by the minute. Yeah. And you can tell, like, it's it's so funny. For some reason, like, I was listening to the news, you know, like on Friday, and people were talking about, like, oh, you know, now he's meeting with Mike Johnson. And so they're talking about election fraud for the 2024 election. And they're like, it was so funny to me just hearing these people, who, like, you know, on CNN and MSNBC or wherever it is, they're like, he's laying the groundwork. Like, they were surprised. I'm like, this is exactly what he did in 2020. This is exact the same thing they did and the exact same time
yes.
that he did it. He's like going, you start early. You start 7 months out. We're in April and it's November's coming up. And you start saying that this is going to be the most corrupt election ever. And that is what they're doing again. And for some unknown reason, these dingbats buy it. They buy it. And I don't know. And, you know, and by the same tone, you know, so you have them saying that this is election is going to be the thing. He's putting it out there. That's his influence. It's the same influence that he said when he announced, like, come to January 6th, it's going to be wild. It is the exact same amount of influence that he has when he was inviting people to throw an insurrection. It's... he has no soul.
No soul.
He has no conscience.
Zero.
He does not care about anybody.
Nobody but himself.
And I want to know what sort of compromise does he have on all of these people that they're just so scared of this little tiny hand orange man?
I think they want Republicans to rule, and if he is the vehicle to get there, they don't care about any of the things that we see. You know, they want to continue to tear down LGBTQ rights. They want abortion to be federally banned. And if he is their instrument, if he is the person that is going to, you know, have control over these things, they don't care about the character. But it's so hypocritical because he's not patriotic. He's not God-fearing. He's mm-hmm. not a family man.
Oh, yeah.
He's not truthful. He's the antithesis to anybody that should be in his position of being president of the United States.
The whole thing is very Machiavellian with what you just described about how the end justifies the means.
That's it.
And that's what's going on. Listen, we have to take a break.
But we do have callers.
I know, callers, I want you to stay on the line. We would take them, but truthfully, I have to go to the bathroom real bad. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, it is the final thrilling show-stopping moments and your calls about Chicago right here on WCPT. Hang on there, callers.
Hang on.
Hi, this is Renee Taylor. You're listening to Ouch Chicago, WCPT 820.
And welcome back to Ouch Chicago's. Got up here mm-hmm. feeling a little bit better.
Yes, he is.
Sorry. It's like that commercial, you know, gotta go right now. It was like, oh, this, no. No. We gotta go. But we're on to great things. And callers, thank you so much for hanging on. We're gonna talk to you. Let's go to Maria. Welcome. You're on Ouch Chicago.
Everyone.
Hi, Maria.
I was listening to your comments regarding the loser.
Yeah.
He is a soul sucking vampire that has no awareness that he sucks.
Yeah. No self awareness.
Horrible man.
Horrible. Horrible.
He has no none. He
none.
Thinks he's the best thing ever, and yeah, he wants to keep his you know, his behind out of prison. But, you know, when he was in office, he had all his cronies doing his, you know, his dirty work and doing all the work. He really was just out there playing golf.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
Oh.
Yep.
And how many of them ended up in prison?
Yeah,
Navarro,
exactly.
Michael Cohen.
Exactly. He doesn't dirty his little fingers, okay?
Uh-uh.
So I can't wait for the day to see him in orange color, you know, prisoner outfit to match his tan. Because
yeah.
I am so sick of this loser. I don't know how he has gaslighted people. I mean, that includes some of my family members
yep.
and friends.
Assembly.
I just sit there like, really? Seriously?
I know.
I mean, I had a niece say, oh, people don't understand him. I says, of okay, you bought it. You drank the lemonade.
We understand.
But Maria, here's one thing. And like, I don't know how far gone your niece is. My brother is completely all in, like dipping a toe into QAnon kind of territory. But do you take these opportunities to ask what is it about his policies that is really attracting you to him? Like, I think this is a moment to like, we, if you have people who are like, well, I think he's kind of misunderstood, be like, then tell me, talk, like, have that conversation. You know, if they're not too far gone, my brother's a lost cause. He's MAGA all the way. But these are moments that we really, as like progressive people, as Democrats, as people who just like democracy and like who doesn't want to see fascism come to the United States, that we need to really just talk about, like, have you thought about the fact that he said he's going to be a dictator on day one? You know, are you able to have those conversations with your friends and family who are like, maybe he's misunderstood?
No, because she doesn't talk to me. She actually blocked me at one point because I'm very upfront about where I'm at.
True.
You know, I'm politically aware. I can discern things. They made it sound like I drank the Kool-Aid when I voted for Obama, and I researched everything. I was very happy to vote for Obama, President Obama. Mm-hmm. And when it came time for this fool, I voted for Hillary, and I don't know, I think that election was stolen. Personally, I think there were some shenanigans that went on because she had the most high pop numbers and popular vote. So they need to get rid of the Electoral College because that's an ancient relic from the times of, when you had three quarters a human being. You know what I'm saying?
I know. I wish they would get rid of it. It's horrible. That doesn't serve the democracy that we're supposed to be about when it comes to the will of the people.
Right, and that was something that was used by the Southerners because they didn't have as much numbers as the Northern states. They want to make sure, and that was something that was an agreement they came to. Well, excuse me, now you got the numbers, okay? So maybe you guys may not win, but you know what? If you did it fair and square, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because I voted for Republicans before, but they were sane.
Right.
Yeah. And they were better than the Democratic candidates that were running up against them. So I'm a very, discerning person. I check everything, even the judges, because we have to be careful who we put in the courts.
100%.
Because what happened with the Supreme, the House of Representatives, the Senate, who do we got in the justice, the Supreme Court? We got these lunatics, except for three that are actually pretty decent people, but we got six lunatics that think they're living 200 years ago. You know what? The document, the Constitution, the document is a living document.
Right.
You're
informed like so many of our people are, and I wish more people were informed. They might think differently. Yeah. Maria, thank you for your call and listening to Out Chicago, and keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I do. I do enjoy your show.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There you go. Go see Purpose at Steppenwolf. There we go. let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Steve. Welcome. You're on Out Chicago.
Yeah, so I wanted to address the question that you posed, which is, exactly how is it that he has a path to victory? And, you're absolutely right. For the MAGA Republicans, they have a lock on that party. But if you divide Americans up into the sort of three segments that define us politically, and that is Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, Republicans are the smallest cohort. And among that, then, there are MAGA Republicans, because the entire Republican Party is certainly not MAGA. But because of the structure of their system, this is going to be their nominee. Now, we don't need to get everyone who is MAGA to vote for Joe Biden. We just simply need to get Democrats to turn out, a large number of independents to realize that Donald Trump is insane. I don't care that you have to love Joe Biden. I think he's done a very good job as president. But you just look at him in terms relative to Donald Trump and ask yourself who you should vote for. And then there are a handful of Republicans who actually are willing to vote for Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the alternative, they just need to stay home. Simply say, you know what? Okay, maybe I can't bring myself to go there and pull the switch for Joe Biden. But I certainly can't vote for Mr. Crazy either. So therefore, I'm not going to go and vote. I'm not going to show up. So it's all about all of these dynamics that are at play. And you're absolutely right. The abortion issue, as acute as it has become, it is a real touchstone for this election because Republicans were hoping that post 2022 that this would die down and that it would just sort of be in the rearview mirror. People wouldn't be as inflamed about it. But then you get case after case, such as in Alabama, such as in Arizona, so that you get people like Carrie Lake and Donald Trump and so many others who are saying to themselves, look, if we're on the wrong side of this, this is for Republicans what immigration is for Democrats. This is their cancer. And they are definitely afraid that if they're on the wrong side of this, that it's going to turn out a lot of people, men, women, all sorts of people of different political ideologies. And as you pointed out, you know, this notion of a national ban on abortion, well, that's contrary to what a lot of Republicans want, which is states' rights to govern in terms of this policy. So they're not on board with this either in terms of some overarching federal government telling women what to do. And in a lot of cases, they're more libertarian. Okay, if Oklahoma wants that, that's Oklahoma's business. But you have no right to tell California or New York or Illinois what the women in those states are going to do, which is what some people actually are advocating. So, that's how Donald Trump loses or wins, depending upon, you know, how many people are actually willing to step outside of their little bubble, because that's the other problem, the big one, and that is we're not in the same universe. This isn't 20 years ago where we're all listening to the same media. Mm-hmm. They're in their own little bubble.
Yeah.
They don't hear any of the conversations we're having and the facts that people are discussing. Nope. They have their alternative facts. There's an entire media that's now built on that, so that they don't know anything that we're discussing.
Yeah, and thank you so much for that, Steve. Because this is also what's kind of like making me worried about this whole trial that's going to be, you know, that's starting tomorrow when they're picking out the jury. Like, this is going to feed into the whole like the victim complex that he is playing up with his base. Like, they're coming after me, and then that weird line of like, I'm being persecuted, so you don't have to be. And like, if they're coming after me, they're going to come after you. Like, he's
well, that's what keeps his base in line. But that doesn't keep people that are really watching, because they may not be watching the news and listening to what we listen to, but if they just watch him and listen to him, to me, if you're a common sense person who has, you know,
but they, here's the, they don't listen. The way that they're listening to him is through the filter of somebody else, of Newsmax or Fox or Breitbart or whatever. One of these like kooky pants right wing media things where they will edit things down. Like I remember the last election cycle. I was like talking to my brother. I'm like, will you watch Biden? No, I can't do it. Like, well, I'm watching this to see, like, it's like, I'll catch part of it. I'll catch clips of it. I'm like, but you get your news from YouTube. Like, you are in everything that what he says gets filtered. And then it comes into this whole, like, I'm a victim. They're coming after me. They're going to come after you next if I'm not the guy here.
That's what they buy into. You're right. And if they can only watch him through the eyes of Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert.
But not even that. Not even through the eyes of other people. If they just watched what was being said.
They run their clips. I'm saying they run actual clips. They don't edit. And then they talk, you know, he said this.
Well, but they also do the exact same thing on these right wings. So they run clips, but they run out selected parts.
Sure.
You just watch the actual coverage. If you watch exactly what he says and the context with which it is said, that is a whole different ballgame. But it happens on both sides. Like, I will both sidism. You know, like, you can take things out of context for each way, but it's like, come on, guys. Enough is enough. This man is going to be on trial for a crime. He's already been committed, like, he's already been found guilty for sexual assault.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter to
people. But that doesn't matter because she's not his type. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, what?
I know. Democrats have to come out, like, you know, that's the key. And I think some Republicans will do what some Democrats did in 2016 who couldn't stomach Hillary for whatever reason. They thought maybe she'd win anyway. They voted for a third party, or they sat out. That's going to come full circle. I think there's Republicans that are going
to
sit out.
But now we've already have a third party candidate that's trying to weasel his way in.
And like, what a Kennedy.
But he won't get it. But he's not going to get out because he's being, you know, like, because he's a Kennedy. You know, there's talk about another weird.
Well,
of course they've turned his back on him. Yeah. But I'm just saying he's not going to do that for that very same reason. You know, it's just, it's very frustrating. And I'm trying to be calm.
I know, we're trying to be calm. We have several more months to get all fired up.
Far too many months. But look, there's going to be election fraud in 2024 because I'm starting to say it now. And I will say it now until the rest of the time. And again, like sleepy Joe Biden or he's a criminal mastermind. Which one is it?
It is such you a know, bunch it's, of...
It is a bunch of hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha.
Ugh. Well,
stay strong, people.
That note,
stay strong.
Stay strong and go outside today because it's really, really pretty. And maybe your superpowers will be released after your path of totality gamma ray infusion that's going on there. You know, if I was an X-Man, my superpower would be to produce boogers and earwax because it just happens naturally. It's very strange. Okay. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this week about Chicago. I want to thank all of our guests today, Dr. Gary Bucher. From the Anal Dysplasia Clinic Midwest, and actor Ayana Bria Bakari. Go see Purpose at Steppenwolf. It's fantastic. Paul, thank you so much for being in here. It's always lovely to see your face.
Yes, it is.
Even though I make fun of you every year. Thank you so much for ruining things back there. Ellen, I'm glad you had a
rip on Henry today.
No.
He's too nice.
He's just tall and he's really good hair.
We don't know him well enough yet to rip on
him. Yeah, we don't know rip on Henry.
See how it is.
Yeah. You're one of us. One of us. Ellen Miller, I'm glad you had you're back and
Thanks,
you had a
Scott.
Wonderful time.
I appreciate it.
And I'm Scott Duff. And until next week,
stay proud.